This is the Ag Market Network's monthly cotton conference call, brought to you by Cotton Incorporated and by Certified Fibermax. You can find more online at agmarketnetwork.net.
We want to welcome everyone today to our September 14th edition of the Ag Market Network monthly teleconference. My name is Pat McClatchy. Today we have a very special program. We'll start off today with our cotton market panel led by Dr. O.A. Cleveland, who's Professor Emeritus, Mississippi State. He's joined by our panel, Dr. John Robinson of Texas A&M and Gerald Nieper of Calcott, Kip Butts of Informa. After our usual cotton market discussion, we will have Bob Anishak, who's Managing Director of Ola Inc., who will interview two veteran cotton executives with Cotton Incorporated, Kim Kitchings, Vice President of the Corporate Strategy and Program Metrics Division, and Cater Hake, Vice President of Agriculture and Environmental Research, about the many challenges facing cotton today. Before we get started, we want to recognize and thank Bayer Crop Science and Cotton Incorporated for sponsoring our program. A reminder to everyone that this program will be archived, we think, within an hour of our broadcast. Anyone's welcome to go to the Ag Market Network to be able to look at that or any of our other programs that we do. So let's go ahead and get started. Dr. O.A. Cleveland, thanks for leading us off today.
Okay, Pat, thank you so very much for the opportunity to be here. It's always my pleasure to share my thoughts on the cotton market. And with respect to that, notice I did emphasize thoughts and to clear the air for this morning, the comments made by myself cannot be transmitted, retransmitted, rebroadcast. They cannot be copied or used without my written permission. No one person has asked for such permission, and no one has presented me with papers to sign to give that permission. All comments are personal opinions of mine expressed by me and should not be taken as facts. Neither should they be implied that I have any personal knowledge of facts other than those previously published by the United States Department of Agriculture. Use of any of these comments are at the sole risk of the user and explicitly not those of the speaker. Be sure to understand that these are ideas and the personal thoughts not presented as facts, only opinions. Begin this morning in this September report with a little bit of a lump in our throat. Our sponsor for these programs backed out on us Friday with no advance notice, no advance warning, and have not followed through in any form, shape, or fashion. Cotton Incorporated, of course, has been our sponsor since the very beginning, and they have kept us together throughout these many years. And now, I think what Gerald and Kip and myself saw as the most important program provided by Cotton Incorporated was canceled, and all three of us have been very perplexed as to why this was done. But nevertheless, it's been done, and the three of us have certainly been looking for new sponsors throughout the weekend and have had some success. That being said, I will move into specifically the September report. And the USDA estimates have been at the center of great attention simply because of the reason that most members of the U.S. trade and merchant community had believed that USDA would significantly adjust U.S. production back higher by some 1 to 2 million bales. Now, we've been discussing this in our weekly commentary time and time again, and it was generally believed that the Texas yield estimates were too low, and additionally that the Texas abandonment was far too high, and this would cause the U.S. crop to be much higher than what USDA had reported in August. Now, USDA did, in fact, in their report, confirm that abandonment was, in fact, too high, and they adjusted to abandonment. But nevertheless, they really did not provide any boost in yields at all based on their in-field survey. And the long-awaited September crop report failed to raise U.S. yield estimates. Total U.S. production was actually increased, however, by 346,000 bales, up to 13.4 million bales. Again, just 300,000 bales larger than the prior report. And some, depending on what side of the fence you're sitting on, some 600,000, 700,000 to 1,000,000. 700,000 below what the merchandising community had been expected. Nevertheless, I think we saw that the numbers USDA came forth with were in fact what the several of us analysts had anticipated. Planted U.S. acreage was adjusted lower by 343,000 acres, and it gives us a planted acreage this year of only 8.6 million acres. Harvested acreage was increased again, roughly 300,000 acres. But this puts U.S. planted acres at the lowest level in modern times. Very, very apropos given our farm bill situation, given the crisis that we're facing with respect to demand, and given the price response of other commodities vis-a-vis cotton. I think probably the acreage was probably influenced mostly by the excessive wet conditions and the amount of land that failed to be planted and the land that was prevented from planting. And this should give us a very significant wake-up call for 2016. Without the Farm Bill benefits, U.S. production with prices in the 60s, or the low 60s, mid 60s, or even the high 60s, it's just simply not profitable, and acreage in U.S. will erode to even sharply lower levels as we move into 2016. Now, of course, last week I had suggested we'd see a little bit higher acreage. I think we will in certain areas, but the percentage of cotton planted, even if we do increase acreage in 2016, the percentage of the cotton plant in the U.S. vis-a-vis the world will, in fact, fall. Now, the USDA report had drawn lots of attention, or mentioned earlier, because Texas, and in that report, the USDA did lower Texas planted acres, and at the same time, it increased harvested acres in Texas. Which had by increasing the harvest acres, it took abandonment from about 17% down to roughly 6%. Now that's a significant change, and now it does represent probably, if not the lowest, one of the lowest abandonment levels ever for Texas. And it did, these adjustments did raise Texas harvested. Anticipated harvesting about 450,000 bales. This nevertheless was pretty much offset. You take 80,000 bales out of Arkansas, 75,000 out of North Carolina, 65,000 out of Oklahoma, 40,000 out of Tennessee, a little bit here, there, and yonder. And basically what we see is that with that Texas abandonment rate and with these smaller crops in some of these areas, we tend to see we can't see it any higher. We can't see production any higher as we move down the road. Texas abandonment at 6%, you just really can't go any lower. You would anticipate that in fact is going to be increased, which means we take more production out. The volatility in U.S. planted and harvest acreage estimates this season, of course, we've talked about it time and time again, caused by the record wetness as planting neared an end, and also because of the adjustments that we've noticed in failed acreage and prevented acreage that were not typically on the screen with us. We're just something we've not really had to deal with much. But the attention now turns to yields. Obviously, the next report is October, so we're fully into yields now. And basically, we also understood most of the trade was talking about the heat units in South Texas was catching up, and all the blooms and all the fruit that was on the plant. You know, we had discounted all of that basically in August with the idea that those blooms would never reach maturity. Of course, they could reach maturity if we had record cotton weather coming for Texas, but it would be truly record. It would be truly basically carrying the summer through the end of December and into January, and the odds of that are certainly probably somewhere above zero, possibly even above zero, and I say that with surety, with tongue-in-cheek, of course. But we knew all along that those blooms would never be harvested. And as expected, the USDA, again, in its September report, as it had in the August report, did not count blooms in its bowl counts for yield calculation. And basically that was simply because it was too late to harvest any of those blooms, so that they would not be counted. And while the windshield farmers saw all those blooms out in the field, were very excited, the idea was well known that they would never be harvested. And we'll move back to weather again, and the weather in the entire U.S. Cotton Belt from Texas to the Atlantic Coast changed last week. West Texas weather pattern has already turned cooler and wetter. This is a pattern that the weather models have seen coming all year. They've talked about it all year. There was some difference in the models, but they all came together about 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden they were spitting out the same thing, for the most part, and very consistent with what the two major models had said all year, and that is that the record heat and periods of drought in the Mid-South and Southeast took a toll on yields, as illustrated by the changes in USDA estimates, and it also, you know, it told us that a cold front was bringing rain to the region by the end of the week, and Saturday's highs declined into the 75-85 range. And more importantly, as we get into it, because of the cotton is in Texas, these models are forecasting the start of a wet, cool fall, and that will give us some major issues with both our yields and quality as we move forward. The argument will soon turn to the September production increase, the production increase, and whether or not that increase can be maintained. And certainly it can be maintained. The concern is that with the weather patterns we're seeing, that the future crop estimates will in fact be lower and not as high as they are now at 13.4 million bales. The USDA in this report did, in fact, increase export estimates by 200,000 bales. I would have thought intuitively they would have increased it by 300,000 bales, but they took exports up to 10.2 million, up from the 10 million bale prior month. And so effectively, the carryover was little impacted. Carryover last month had been estimated at 3.1 million bales. Today it's estimated at 3.2 million bales. So not a lot of difference, and certainly carryover at this level is very positive to any underlying market. The September report made a host of changes within other countries. For the most part, very limited, very minor changes. A couple of changes do need to be borne out somewhat, though, that the main adjustments outside of the U.S. were the Brazilian 2015-2016 production was lowered by 300,000 bales down to 6.7 million. Pakistani production was lowered 200,000. Tanzanian production 100,000 bales lower. Global consumption is where we continued to take that hit with respect to the marketplace, and that was lowered 1.2 million bales, a rather significant hit there. But in keeping with the 300 bale reduction, crop production in Brazil, we do note that USDA reduced Brazilian mill consumption 300,000 bales as it updated its 2014-15 data and lowered it another 400,000 bales for 2015 and 2016, some 700,000 bales. of consumption were recorded or as overestimated. So we had this 700,000 bale reduction for over two consecutive crop years. Indian meal use was also lower, 300,000 bales. Indonesia was lower, some 100,000 bales. Of course, Indonesia, a major U.S. purchaser, as is Turkey, it was 100,000 bales lower, and Thailand, 100,000 bales lower. Of course, the U.S.'s primary market today, Vietnam, that estimate was not lowered, and we would look over time to see, in this particular year, I think we will see that, in fact, cotton exports to that country will increase, and I would anticipate that cotton exports now, as I said earlier, estimated at 10.2 million bales by USDA, will in fact increase. The other major factor playing out, we note that USDA elected not to change its Indian production. I know in my weekly report last week, I said, well, we're looking at 1 to 2 million bales. I was a little wimpy. Don't mind admitting when I'm wimpy. We'll do it more often, but I would be doing it too often. I had said 1 to 2 million bales or 1 to 1.5 million bales. Now then, this morning after they've looked at more and more weather charts, by and large, the weather folks are suggesting that the Indian crop is overestimated by USDA somewhere between 2 and 3 million bales. And it's very significant, and it's basically all related to the monsoon is gone. I remember John Robertson after B.B. King died, he told us all the red was gone, but all the monsoonal winds are gone now with respect to where the cotton is grown in India. There's still some rain coming in monsoonal activity in southern India, and there's a little cotton down there, but basically, as we move further, we'll see stock adjustments in India move significantly lower. One thing we do need to take stock in, and I did not look up a figure, and I don't know, Gerald, Kip, either of y'all have access to your computer immediately. I wonder if you can come up with a stocks estimate for China outside of China. What were the stocks outside of China at this same time last year? Bottom line, where I'm headed to is that this particular year for 2015-16, USDA did raise its estimate of stocks outside of China just about a million bales, raised it from 40.61 million bales to 41.6 million bales. And that becomes important because the quality issues around the world and the availability of quality cotton and the availability of quality cotton being, in fact, so tight. This tells us, basically, as I said, 41.6, round that off, 42 million bales of cotton outside of China available to the market. You factor in the Indian situation. You factor in that this U.S. crop, because of weather conditions, is not going to get any larger. And all of a sudden, we have a limited availability of cotton outside the confines of China. What this comes in bears out is that the machine picked cotton that the world has to find for spinning. We are going to find it only in the U.S., only in Australia, only in Brazil, a little bit out of West Africa, but by and large, that's where the machine picked. I mean, that's where the cotton is that the textile mills are looking for, the quality cotton issues, and it's just going to be extremely limited, and it's going to have a very positive reaction for prices, certainly down the road. Again, mention India again and the small crop. It's very easy just to go through state by state, region by region, and see the reduction in planted acres, the reduction in planted hectares, simply because of weather. So you know that the crop size is in serious trouble because of the major reductions. Again, I do point out that there is still time for the southern end of India, and we'll see some decent crops coming out of there, but That's not the cotton region. That's just simply not the cotton region. We've seen a weakness in prices based on demand. One, merchants, worldwide merchants, have been very long the basis. They have plenty of cotton. They've been 2015 crop cotton that they had bought in anticipation of a little bit higher demand, so they've been a little slow in the uptake of the 2016 crop, and that has kept those prices a little lower. But anytime we move futures down to nearly 62 cents, still above 62, but anytime we move futures close to 62 cents, we do see a very nice pickup in demand. And that's really something we've seen all year, whether it be if demand picked up at 63 cents after we've been above 65 for a while. And we'll continue to see that. But at the same time, we're going to continue to see textile mills being hand-to-mouth buyers. That's all they've had to be over the past year, maybe even 18 months. So there's just no building of inventory stocks at the spinning level. They're not building their raw cotton supplies. They continue to buy, as I said, just hand-to-mouth, and that puts a little bit of a cap on exports at this time. But that decision by the mills has served them very well. So interesting, I heard someone talking about it this weekend that demand was cyclical. Demand is anything but cyclical. You can actually take a high school economics chart and see that demand goes not straight up, but it's nothing but up, 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 demand for cotton. We have the world population growing by 75 million people a year. So, yes, demand for cotton is increasing. It is going up. It's just that it would be a whole lot better to if there's 75 million people coming on the earth each day, it would be a whole lot better to put a few of those folks in cotton clothing rather than chemical clothing or clothing wrapped in oil. So here we go, Pat, with respect to the supply-demand situation, and that leads me to a conclusion that I would suggest that prices will continue to back and fill, but nonetheless, we will have an upward bias to price activity. Again, specifically as we move forward, the world crop comes down a bit more, and I've still not given up totally on the 70 cents I promised for a December futures contract. It's looking more and more doubtful, but we do go back up to the high 80s. We've got we're basically trading a little more than a 2 cent range now for the last 3 or 4 weeks. 62 to 64 cents. I think we do break out into the 64, 66 cent range. But on top of the 66 cents, we have a lot of resistance just stacked. And we've got to just have to break through that 68.5 cent level if we're going to think we can take it higher. So the higher prices may have to wait until the March, the May, the December 16 time periods. That's where we are there, and I'd be very, very interested to hear what my cohorts have to say about the supply-demand report.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Gerald or Kip, if he's with us, or John for your thoughts.
This is John. It's a quick reaction. I mean, OA was pretty comprehensive in that assessment there. What's really struck me, the two things he already mentioned that struck me was the adjustment in the world consumption downward. Just the way that was spread across a half a dozen countries outside of China, that I don't know that the market really cared that day, but I don't know, that struck me as a bearish portent, more than usual, just because of the way that it was just a whole slew of countries and perhaps reflecting general downturns in economic activity generally. But that was one thing. The other one was just to point out that, over time, when we disagree with USDA production forecasts, over time you get to September and then you get to October and it begins to kind of zero in on the number in the neighborhood of where they are. So it was in the direction that we were expecting, but it wasn't as large. I think that's kind of telling. I tend to agree with OA that we're probably not going to have much higher U.S. production. So that's, I would agree with him further, that figures into being on the high side of this, you know, futures range in the 60-cent range. We should be pushing a little bit more to the high side because of that.
Gerald, have you got any thoughts?
Well, you know, several thoughts, but I don't know that any of them make any sense. You know, you can understand maybe a little bit of the reduction in Brazil as far as consumption. This sort of kind of follows the crop, and I suppose India, Indonesia, Pakistan, where those things, those countries specifically, they've had a pretty good run of exporting yarns, cotton yarns into China, so maybe the Chinese, you know, are seemingly going to buy a few less cotton yarns, a few pounds less of cotton yarn. I don't know. One thing I find interesting, I had the pleasure of meeting with some Chinese textile folks this last week, and their comments were that they would be using more cotton had they had access to more quotas. What quotas that they have left, they're certainly saving for better quality cotton. You know, they've got three choices, either to use the bad quality cotton that's in China, to close down or to slow down consumption, or C, use the man-made fibers. So I don't know that we're necessarily losing market share to man-made fibers because the man-made fibers are such a good deal out there, but rather the fact that China just, you know, they've got to do something with all that capacity in China. So what better way to use the man-made fibers than to limit the imports of cotton? So the Chinese spinners were really quite adamant that they would be using more cotton had they had access to more quota. Now, they can't afford to import cotton with a 40% tariff, but they certainly can import more cotton with a 1% tariff. Whether or not the Chinese government will ever increase that mandated 794,000 metric tons of WTO mandated quota remains to be seen. But that was somewhat encouraging to hear that we're just not losing market share to the man-made fibers because somehow, you know, those chemical fibers are better than the natural fibers. You pointed out about the machine pick harvest around the world, and you kind of have to throw Greece and Spain in that mix. I know those aren't big harvests, but they do count. You look at production this year, the machine picked harvest, 23.8 versus 27.2 last year, 26.6 the year before, 29.4 the year before, 31, 32. So this is going to be the lowest machine picked harvest since 2009 when we had 20.5 million bales. Ending stocks at 12.2 is right about where we were in 2013, a little bit lower than in 2012, but not nearly as low, of course, as we were in 2009 when ending stocks were right at 8.5 million bales. So, you know, you make a good point about the machine-picked harvest OA. I think those supplies are going to gradually tighten as we move forward. The exportable supplies around the world of major U.S. competitors are down 2.25 million bales versus this time a year ago, and they have yet to recognize the fact that the Indian crop will be smaller than the 29 million bales. Is it 2 to 3, 1 to 2, 3 to 4 million? Who knows? But I'm a little bit surprised that USDA has taken such a slow baby steps, really, in terms of reducing the size of the Indian crop. And I still wonder about the size of the Chinese crop at 26 million. I just don't know that it's 26 million when not maybe not everyone in China, but there seems to be a general consensus within China that crop is certainly closer to 25 than to 26, if not below 25 million. So, Wade, do you have any other comments on the Chinese crop? I mean, do you feel like the 26 million bales is going to hold up, or are you hearing anything different?
Well spoken there, Gerald. And first, let me come back. And yes, you're exactly correct. I should have. I just tend to forget to add Greece and Spain in the machine picked inventory. And as you say, they are small crops, but they are very important crops. They do move, and there is definite demand for both of those. So you're exactly correct. China, the Chinese crop has got to come down. Based on every bit of evidence we get. But at the same time, I understand, I think, USDA's presence there. I think without question, this is, again, like everything else said here today, out of my mouth, with the exception of the hardcore facts from USDA, I can't help but think USDA is very much intends to lower China. It's just that they do not have enough of the evidence that they want, that they prefer to use to do that. I think everything's falling in line, but they're a little bit more methodical. They take a little bit more caution before they do that. Sometimes I think they're just far too slow to move, but nevertheless, that may be part of the function of having an official forecaster, i.e. the U.S. government. So certainly we want those numbers. They're very important to the industry, so that just does occur. That basically concludes the comments I want to make. Pat, are you going to go around the round table picking
up?
Yeah,
absolutely. Let's look at – let's just – did Kip Butts ever join us? All right. Let's go to John. Before let's even get to that, there had been some talk months ago about the possibility of a wetter fall in Texas and what that might mean. John, what kind of forecast are you seeing, or what do the weather patterns look like that you're hearing about in Texas?
Well, it's cooler today, but what you mean is long-term forecast is, NOAA's got strong El Nino. They're tooting that pretty loudly, so that has people here concerned about getting a harvest out. It reminds them of, I believe it was 2004, which was a sloppy, wet, extended type of harvest. It was great for the 2005 crop that followed, but it lowered quality and at this stage, it would reduce yield potential probably. So the people are worried about that. And if it comes to the price range, if you want to solicit that, I'm looking at possible extremes in either direction. I'd just put out a futures price range of 60 to 70 and expect that we're going to stay right in the middle of it.
Okay. OA, back to you. I mean, you're feelings were low 60s, high 60s, or what? Give us your thoughts again.
Okay, low 60s. I really think the 62 cent area is the bottom where we are now. I say 62 cents. Okay, so we close 61.30, 61.20. Well, that's still 62 cents to me. So, the lows are in, the bottom's in. We're higher from here. We've got a lot of resistance now at 64, 64.50. It just will climb the ladder. But the major, major resistance that we've got to get beyond, and it's just stair-stepped up there, but the major, major resistance we've got to get through there sits up around 68 cents, and give or take a few points. But that's what we've got to get through. That's the barrier we have not been able to climb. That's the barrier we've not been able to rise through. So that's where we're hanging right now. And we've got to get there, and it will take the certainly a million, probably two, maybe even 2.5 million bales, smaller crop in India, and I think the preponderance of evidence I'm seeing this morning as I wake up and read reports around the globe that that's on its way, and then more reductions in China. So I think it's there. I think that's there. Pat, without your permission, but with foretelling and forewarning to my cohorts, I want to make a little statement because of the many laughs and I was able to enjoy through the weekend and the analyses I was developing, and you and certainly members of this panel are aware that occasionally I've was, you know, where's Billy Donovan when I need him? And a couple of weeks ago, I made the comment, where's Willard Sparks when I need him? And, of course, Saturday night, I'm trying to, where's Dak Prescott when I need him in the first half? But none of them were available. And, of course, after the ball game Saturday and the funny phone calls I had Sunday, you know, where's Duke's Wooters now when I need him? None of these people, of course, are here or were there as far as this call. Some are deceased. But I noticed this weekend I found a number of folks in the cotton industry that were basically wanting to know why I have thrown cotton under the bus, apparently a couple of weeks ago when I challenged the industry to do something about its building demand. I was accused of throwing the cotton industry under the bus. And I would just say that those people that are making those comments certainly are either overpaid or overpositioned and are basic failures in the work they're doing, trying to suggest by any stretch of the imagination that I am the problem with cotton demand. I don't buy that much, but what I do buy is cotton. And if they want some of my hide, then you know, there's a lot of fat and a lot of hide standing in these shoes right now, and they can come down and get all they want. But we're not doing the cotton industry any good by wanting to strike out at me at OA Cleveland, because he has challenged the cotton industry to do something about demand, not to sit back on their haunches, as has been the situation for the past several years. So if my name comes up as a problem in the cotton industry, then you know it's coming from someone who's either A, not doing their job, or B, is considerably overpaid. We must resolve to find a common goal, a common program to rebuild cotton demand as we did in the 1970s. We did it once. We can do it again. We just have to have the leadership that's more interested in building demand than in protecting certain people. Certainly the seed companies have done a marvelous job with production efforts and trying to reduce cost of production, and the demand problem associated with the very high cost of production problem are issues. And we do need, in fact, to see some agricultural research coming from these areas, and that's something we've not seen in a good while. It's far too late for all producers to get involved in cotton, all segments to get involved in cotton. All grower groups are going to have to get back into this to making active decisions with respect to cotton's future. You know, we cannot leave it to the few. The whole grower industry, the whole grower base must get involved. And if the grower base does not get involved, then we deserve nothing but failure. But, you know, again, I would just say if I'm perceived to be the problem, get rid of me. Absolutely no problem. But when you get rid of me, you're still going to have the same problem. I don't buy that much cotton. I just buy what one person needs to move on. So we see a lot of unhappy growers across the belt, whether it be policy-related, whether it be the demand-related, just whatever it is. But we're seeing a 75 million increase in population every single year across the globe, 75 million. Now, there ought to be a few of these people that we could figure out how to get clothing on their body that's made out of cotton and not chemical fibers. One person told me that babies don't make decisions about what they wear. Well, babies don't make decisions about anything. Their parents do. So let's don't blame it on the babies either. The demand is there. It's just whether or not we will resolve ourselves to go get it. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And just wear me out at the coffee shop if you want to, but that just means it's time you could be in your office working to promote cotton.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up, this portion of what we do. We thank OA as our lead speaker. We thank John for joining us and Gerald Nieper. And that concludes this portion of our program. We thank everybody and our sponsors. At this point, something new now, we're going to turn over this to Bob Anishak to lead the discussion with Cotton Incorporated. Thank you, Bob, for being with us.
Pat, thank you very much, and Thank you, everybody on the panel. This is a terrific lead-in for the topic that I'm going to be discussing today. It's pretty much dealing with the challenges, meeting the challenges of cotton today and tomorrow. As we know, cotton is a massive industry. It's an essential crop for so many farmers around the world. It's also an essential fiber for the global textile and apparel industries. For many years, cotton was the dominant fiber used in textiles, clothing, and home furnishings, but in recent years, synthetics have gained market share at the expense of cotton. Many consumers may prefer cotton over synthetic alternatives, but some feel that cotton is hard on the environment. In turn, price competition between cotton and synthetics has become particularly intense. Lifestyle changes have also played a role in the demand for cotton. As a result, fashion has changed to better reflect consumer attitudes. Why do some people think cotton is hard on the environment? What are the facts? Also, what role do prices play in sourcing decisions by textile mills and brands around the world? Finally, what do changing demographics and fashion mean for the acceptance of cotton by consumers? To help answer these and other questions, I'm joined by two leading cotton experts in the industry, Cater Hake and Kim Kitchings, both with Cotton Incorporated. Strategic topics, like I was just going down, discussing, are of great importance to Cotton Incorporated, as is measuring the presence of cotton at retail, at the mill level, consumer demand, all as well as providing market insights. Cotton Incorporated does an admirable job of promoting that information and making it available to the broader trade. Let me just give a brief background of the two speakers. Cater Hake is Vice President of Agriculture and Environmental Research in Cotton Incorporated, where he is responsible for the Cotton Production Research Program. He leads a team of 8 project managers who develop and support innovative problem-solving research with a network of 300 public sector scientists to increase the profitability and sustainability of cotton farming in the U.S. Cater came to Cotton Incorporated from a long career in cotton research and management. He was most recently Vice President of Technology Development at Delta and Pineland. He has also held positions at Texas A&M University, the National Cotton Council, and the University of California. He holds 3 degrees from the University of California at Davis and at Riverside. And our second speaker would be Kim Kitching. She's Vice President of the Corporate Strategy and Program Metrics Division at Cotton Incorporated. In this role, Kim is responsible for assimilation of global market intelligence to assist in the strategic direction of product development, marketing, and evaluation of markets for cotton. Central to her role is directing the development of consumer attitudinal and consumption studies in the U.S., China, Latin America, and India, as well as cotton economic forecasts and other industry-specific analyses. Kim began her career at Cotton Incorporated in 1995. She received a master's in business administration from Meredith College and a Bachelor of Arts in Business from North Carolina State University. And with that, I have to say welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Sure. Cater, I was wondering if I could start with you. And just
sure.
Understand a little bit more about your natural resource survey and
sure.
Some of the research that you're undertaking right now.
Yeah, Bob, that'd be great. But also let me just say that one thing that we are ramping up is grower outreach. We just launched Cotton Cultivated for growers to get access to the research they've been funding over 40 years. And also we're going to continue with outreach programs such as your Ag Network. You know, we love, and growers particularly love hearing, you know, OA and John and Gerald and yourself talk. So we'll have strong support for this program going forward. So outreach to growers.
Well, I'm glad you said that you're going to have strong support for this program going forward. We have always thought it was an exceptional program, and we were all concerned as to why you fired the only economist on staff there. That was leading.
Oh, hey, we had a reduction
had
in funding.
This I'm aware. The whole industry is aware of a reduction in funding, and BB pointed that out to me when he told me that there would be a large number of other employees that were lost.
Oh, wait, I apologize, but I've got
to take off to the fact that
let's move on with the question.
Problematic
okay.
to me that you have to elect an individual who is. Had strong support for this program and actually started this program.
And OA, we will continue support. But let me just briefly say on the Natural Resource Survey, we had outstanding grower response. growers recognize that consumers matter, and we actually had 10% of the U.S. acreage respond to this natural resource survey. It shows some wonderful things about what's going on in the field that give us bragging rights about U.S. cotton growers. You know, fertilizer use is just about spot on. We're extremely close to 50 pounds of nitrogen per bale in each one of the four regions across the U.S. Phosphorus, potassium are applied just as needed. Water use efficiency has gone through the roof. Growers are getting on average about 70 pounds per acre inch of applied water above dry land. Now, these are some awesome numbers. So the Natural Resource Survey also gives us the ability to see what's important to growers. We ask them priorities, and as you all mentioned earlier, I think OA, you mentioned it, and Bob, that input cost is job one or concern one for growers. Number two is anything having to do with weeds, as you'd expect. And then the third top issue is the value of cottonseed. And so we're pushing on all of those. We've got Dr. Bob Nichols, dead center on weeds. And maybe you know Bob, he is a tiger. You know, anyone that volunteers for three tours of duty in Vietnam, he goes after weeds with an aggression. And so we really need to keep him focused on that issue. But the Natural Resource Survey was the growers' example of how committed they are to giving the marching orders to Cotton Incorporated, but also giving us the hardcore metrics and data that allows us to brag about what they're doing in the fields.
That's really terrific, Cater. I was wondering, in terms of how you would convey a lot of this information to the trade, do you have any future plans, or are you going to be using the new website to convey a lot of the results of these surveys?
Well, Bob, that's a good question. There's so much meat in there that what we're doing is we're parsing it out. A lot of growers are familiar with the Cotton Leads program that we've jointly developed with Australia, so we can brag on each other's cotton and talk about the leadership of U.S. and Australian cotton. We're going to be having a series, so we're going to take each of these bullet points, each of these improvements in metrics, and that's going to be a little separate story that Cotton Leads that goes directly to. Kim, I think we've got over 300 brands and retailers that are members of Cotton Leads that see that information. Plus, we work that into every, not just grower presentation, but every presentation that we give to brands and retailers. So we use that extensively. Hey, Bob, we've got the Cotton Breeder Tour right now. We've got about 120 cotton breeders. And so I'm going to let Kim take it from here, and I'm going to go work with those cotton breeders and get them talking with each other and sharing information. So I'll be signing out and leaving Kim with you. But good
Thank
to visit
you,
with you all.
Thank you very much, Cater. Kim.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, so how are you doing?
Good, doing great.
I just have a few questions, really. I was just wondering if you could just kind of go down and describe Cotton Incorporated's mission and a lot of the things that Cater was talking about. It sounds very, very exciting. Would be very interested to learning more in terms of a lot of the market research and strategy work that Cotton Incorporated is involved with at this point.
Sure, Bob. I think many of the listeners know that our mission is to improve the demand for and profitability of cotton. And we do that in a variety of ways of Cotton Incorporated. And, you know, we like to talk about from dirt to shirt. Now with some of the things going on with cotton seeds, we even like to add dessert to that. But we do everything from the agricultural side, as you've heard about today, from looking at the textile sector into dyeing and finishing, knitting, weaving, understanding global markets for cotton, calling on brands and retailers around the world to consumer marketing efforts in the U.S., China, Mexico, and working hand-in-hand with Cotton International to do promotions as well. And hopefully today, if we have time, we can talk about some of those activities that we're doing for you.
That'd be great. I'd be really interested to learn more about that. So could you talk a little bit more about some of those activities?
Sure, happy to. But before I get into that, I do just want to also address what's happened since the price spike, because I think that helps us really understand some of the choices we've made in our marketing activities. Of course, we know what happened in 2010, 2011, and that U.S. end-use consumption of cotton declined by 10 percentage points, or equivalent to about 3.5 million bales. We have a lot of metrics at Cotton Incorporated, and we were able to look at that 3.5 million bale loss, and we know that 40% approximately of that loss came from mills and manufacturers switching to other fibers. Polyester is our number one competitor, hands down, due to prices primarily, and also some improvements in that fiber. However, 60% of the loss in share may surprise some of the listeners, but it came from a reduction in the weight of garments. So if you think about when you bought your khaki pants or your denim jeans lately and they were lighter weight, you weren't imagining that. They were. The knit shirts are thinner today. They don't last as long. The quality's not there. So we had a movement in weights and we had a movement in fiber that has really concerned consumers, and we've been tracking that over the past 5 years through more than 650,000 customer comments on retailer and brand websites in the U.S., China as well, and understanding that some of their number one concerns relate to quality. We've taken this information and developed a new advertising campaign nationally in the U.S., but we also do promotions in China in conjunction with CCI to help consumers remember, one, cotton is absolutely their favorite fiber, and we've got research that still indicates that as well, and to let them know why it's their favorite. So almost going back to basics, to when our company was started in 1970, and we were facing similar issues about market share and the erosion due to synthetics, and the space age had come in, and it seemed very exciting to be in those markets. Today, we have to remind consumers what cotton brings to the table, everything from the durability and the quality and the comfort, some of the emotional connections that the fabric of lives has brought to consumers, but also other things such as new innovations in technology related to moisture wicking, to water repellency, and other technologies that have been created here at the product development group at Cotton Incorporated.
Yeah, I was wondering too, Kim, you know, with the advent of the yoga pant. Ola's in the denim business, and one of the things that we've noticed is that, you know, for every yoga pant that gets purchased, there seems to be a distinct impact on the denim business as a result. And was wondering if, in terms of how do you see that kind of direct competition in the marketplace, is that simply a question of cost? Is it a change in lifestyle? Is it something that's just will change over time as the fashion changes, or is it more systematic of fast fashion gaining prevalence in the retail business?
Sure, Bob. I think you all of those symptoms were a factor contributing to what's occurred with yoga pants. We could go all the way back to the days of Under Armour when cotton was the enemy, before we started working with them and we were able to get cotton into their line. Then the price spike hit. And so, like all retailers and brands, they were looking for ways to save their margins. However, if you go to their website today, they have a significant number of items offered with cotton in them. But what started with the activewear craze is also now bled into what we call athleisure, where people's first choice in many cases, and sometimes still is, were denim jeans to wear on the weekends and things. We see many women now wearing yoga pants, or what you referred to. And some percentages of that cotton, but it is a change in lifestyle. They're lighter weight. I mentioned that earlier, too. So it can affect cotton's market share. The good news is, though, is that we have seen some indication that consumers say that when I dress up now, when I want to look nice, I put on my denim jeans, not my yoga pants, and they're understanding the proper place for those in the marketplace. So we do talk about that, and we were talking some about our marketing activities, but if you were to go to the fabric of our lives, cottonlives.com and look at our shop cotton collection, you'll see that we tell people where they can go to find cotton yoga pants and to help people look for that directly and look at the tag and affirm that they are available. But you do have to search for those today. But hopefully we'll start to see that change as we're seeing prices moderate and where they're more competitive, not as competitive as they could be with polyester today. So there is hope there, Bob, definitely. And the athleisure trend, though, also opens up more markets to cotton again, too. So it's not just yoga pants we're seeing.
Kim, one other thing that I've noticed in the marketplace is that there's a portion of the consumer population that seems to have some misconceptions about cotton as a viable clean crop. The cotton industry or cotton in general seems to get a bum rap from environmentalists, and in turn a lot of consumers pick up on a lot of the things they see on the web about cotton being somehow a really dirty, environmentally harmful cotton product. I think that certainly has had some impact in the marketplace. What are you guys seeing with regard to that?
Sure, we certainly are getting hit by that. We had prices rise. We had retailers and brands trying to save margins, reducing garment weights, and then we have sustainability coming at us in the cotton industry. So all the organizations in the cotton industry are having to defend our position. And, a lot of people don't understand that cotton is drought and heat tolerant, and it only uses 3% of the world's agricultural water, but it meets one-third of global textile fiber demand. That's significant, Bob. And it's one of those things that there's a lot of numbers that float around out there that are incorrect, but if we can get your listeners, we can get people in the trade to go to our website, Cotton Incorporated, you can go to Cotton Today, and we correct many of those myths to help them understand the correct numbers, recent figures that are available. But as we know in marketing, people will use a lot of different things to what they think is to their advantage and may not always be the actual number. So people have to check what they're hearing and understand what the true market numbers are.
Yeah, because it's one of these things where the degree of confusion and misunderstanding and the quoting of facts that have been refuted or so-called facts or data that have been refuted time and time again, it just keeps coming back up. And so it's sort of like, from my perspective, if there's some way of getting above all that noise to be able to say, look, factually, here's the reality. Here's what cotton is. Here's what cotton does. Here's why cotton is good for a consumer. Here's why it's good for a farmer. Here's why it's good for a mill and so forth. I think that's the type of thing that seems to be really needed more than ever in the marketplace. And so it sounds like Cotton Incorporated has really been trying very hard to get that message out. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, and we know that the positioning of sustainability is very different to the trade and the supply chain, and Cotton Incorporated has been involved in that for more than 40 years since we've existed, as have all of our producers, and certainly in the U.S., and some around the world, too, are doing their best as well. We are getting that information out so that people understand that. And again, we try to drive them to our website. We do presentations about this at conferences to make certain people understand. And we're setting the record straight so they understand that cotton has significant advantages over other fibers as well and what we're allowed to say with the USDA.
Kim, it's really interesting. I'd mentioned to you that I was at the ITMF meeting in San Francisco over the last few days and was very impressed by the Cotton Incorporated presentation that was made by Melissa Bastos, and she touched a lot on the consumer research that you've done and a lot of the work that you're currently doing and where a lot of the trends are being analyzed and so forth. One of the things that I noticed, she spoke a lot about sustainability, but what I also would notice about that entire panel of speakers for the entire two-day or three-day event of speakers, I'm probably talking maybe 20 different speakers, virtually everyone from every angle of the industry was talking about sustainability. I mean, virtually all of them mentioned it somewhere, whether they were even in the government relations, it came up, or whether it was at the retailers who were speaking, it came up. It just seems to be such a dominant theme right now in the industry, and it seems to be something that cotton really needs to be at the forefront of.
Absolutely, we are. We have resources in our public relations area dedicated to this. And again, if we can get listeners to go to the Cotton Incorporated website, go to cottontoday.cottoninc.com, they can learn more about all the activities we're doing, from consumer-oriented activities with Blue Jeans Go Green, and where we take old denim jeans and we recycle them into insulation. And we were just down in New Orleans for the 10th year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and we were able to donate those items and use insulation houses. I think the industry would be amazed at all of the activities throughout the supply chain that we have going on, not to mention things such as using waterless dyeing in our textile manufacturing process, and of course what our producers are doing as well. So we would love to be able to educate people more about these areas, and we absolutely have an outreach with that at Cotton Today, and also in the Cotton Leads program that we contribute to as well.
That's terrific. One other question, and this is a very big question, is sort of like looking towards the future. How do you see what opportunities do you see for cotton going forward, and what factors do you really see affecting the cotton business going forward? We've talked about sustainability, but what other factors do you feel that would be affecting the business going forward?
Well, sure. You know, if we just look at demographics, we see the aging of the population. There's no doubt the activities that Cotton Incorporated is currently involved in the non-wovens arena, whether it be in diapers for children, and I believe you can find those on the shelves now at Target, or you can go to your local CVS and see feminine hygiene products that contain cotton in them as well. That we are looking at non-traditional opportunities. However, we have to be fair, those market sizes are not huge when you look at the amount of fiber that goes into those, but it is an increase in fiber because there's really no cotton in there now. It's primarily wood pulp and other fibers. But then there are other markets that do offer other opportunities in size, such as the apparel market, the activewear market that I'm sure, Bob, you heard about some when you were at ITMF, and the growth in that market by 35% globally from 2020. And again, with some of the technologies, moisture wicking, water repellency, and other things that have been created to go on cotton from Cotton Incorporated scientists, we have opportunity there to increase market share. And while market share has declined for us, activewear has actually been one road that we have made increases in market share. And we're starting to see other areas such as knitwear improve too. I mentioned earlier to you about some of our marketing promotions that are occurring in the China market. We know by 2030 it's going to be the largest consuming market in the world, if not before that. We have been active there along with Cotton Council International for a number of years. We've been doing research there, Bob, since 1994. We understand those markets and the differences there, and there are significant differences depending on where you're at in China as well. So there are many opportunities that exist. We just have to make certain that we have the resources to go after them and the funds and make the best choices we can to prioritize where we can increase demand. And that is our number one goal, to improve the demand for and profitability of cotton.
Definitely, Kim. One last question. I was curious about one of the things I did hear a bit about at ITMF, and you touched on this just a moment ago. I've been kind of intrigued by a lot of talk about cotton making its way into end uses like nonwovens, and the upside potential for that. Do you see that as an upside market and sort of a future market development for cotton?
There are, and again, we've got Jan O'Regan, who leads that area for us and has been with Cotton Incorporated for a number of years. And I mentioned earlier that you can find some products at Target and CVS today that utilize cotton, 100% cotton. There is a new feminine hygiene product for tampons called Lola that is very competitive, almost looks like cosmetics when you buy it in the box, and the marketing these young women have come up with, pretty amazing. We've been involved in that as well. Many other efforts. There are groups in China that we work with, and then certainly all the conferences. So we have a presence in that market. We are looking at that opportunity. But again, the bell usage in that market that we've projected are anywhere from 1 to 2 million bales potential for cotton. So again, you have other opportunities in apparel and other markets that may be larger, but we are certainly keeping an eye on the non-wovens market, and we have active participation in those.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess my final question really just gets back to the whole environmental question and how to set the record straight about cotton opposite the environmental community. And I'd like to just touch base again just a little bit more in terms of the plans that, that Cotton Incorporated has, or the industry in general has, in terms of really setting the establishing the facts and really making it clear to how does Cotton Incorporated reach, say, to a consumer to convey the factual nature of cotton? Because I feel, again, the messaging coming out of a supply chain has been at times very self-serving for depending who the manufacturer is or the retailer, but there's still undeniable truths about cotton that somehow need to be conveyed, and certainly Cotton Incorporated is in the best position to convey those to the supply chain as well as the consumer. So I'd like us to double back around and just ask you again in terms of some of the things that Cotton Incorporated is doing to help get that message out to the consumers.
Sure. We keep our finger on the pulse of the consumer about a lot of different issues, Bob. And one of the things we do annually is an environment study in the U.S., and we ask consumers about how important different items are to them. And they range from recycling to understanding where your garments are made to the sustainability to water use. And when we talk about apparel to consumers, I have to be very candid with you. They tell us what they care about is style, fashion, how it looks on them, and they expect that the people or the brands, mills, and manufacturers are producing it in a sustainable way. But when they go to choose the item, that's not the number one item they're looking at. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't want to tell them about it or that we don't care about it, but when we look at using our marketing dollars, we're trying to help them understand the benefits and what we're doing. And then when they're interested, driving them to the different websites that we have and driving them to programs they say that are more important to them. So when we ask them, well, if you're not as concerned about this, again, at the consumer level in the U.S. when buying apparel, what makes you care about what's going on with the environment and your apparel? And things like Blue Jeans Go Green absolutely come to the top of the list, and keeping clothes out of the landfill and understanding that cotton is biodegradable. So those are the type of messages that we take to the consumer, is what resonates with them, which can be very different than what we take to the trade, and understanding about water use or other things in that realm that the trade cares about.
Gotcha. Well, Kim, thank you so very much, and please thank Cater as well. This has been a really interesting conversation, and I'm very very pleased to learn all these things that Cotton Incorporated is doing, and to learn more about the efforts in terms of what you've been doing at, both on the farm as well as at the consumer level. So thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. It was a joy to be able to share some of the things we're doing with you at Cotton Incorporated, and let us know if there's anything else we can do. We're always happy to talk about these activities.
Sounds great. Thank you. Thank you, goodbye. Pat. Pat?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We appreciate everyone's contribution. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Kim. And thanks, Cater. We appreciate it. And that concludes our meeting of the Ag Market Network.